Hello, good morning, everybody. Thank you again for thank you for inviting me back again to do a khabar. It is always a real honour. I once had a conversation. I had a conversation with a very dear and wise friends about how one can successfully, or what are the kind of successful points of doing these kind of shurim. And he said that often it is a question of throwing out points there, which are food for thought for people to chew over afterwards. So I wanted to start off by doing that with a couple of points before I move on. And a couple of points that I wanted to throw out are things which I've been thinking about on and off. Indeed, Chazal have been thinking about on and off for quite a while. And that comes from the first Nach reference. So there you go, Dan. which is from Sefer Yecheskel. And Sefer Yecheskel, the book of Ezekiel, is particularly relevant this week because it is where the Haftarah is from. The Haftarah is from chapter 44 of Yecheskel. And it's at this stage in the book of Yecheskel that Yecheskel starts to describe what the third Beis HaMikdash would be like. And we are focusing here in particular around the Kohen side of it, the activities of the Kohanim, etc., which is a link into this week's Sedra Emma, which at the beginning of Emma, the Tumah of the Kohen, etc., is also picked up on. So I just wanted to quickly stop there and say that the Yecheskel here is referring to the third Beis HaMikdash. In his time, I think, as we know, Yecheskel was prophesying during the destruction and after the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. So when Yecheskel was prophesying, was he prophesying about the third Beis HaMikdash, or was he prophesying about the second Beis HaMikdash? What do people at the time of the second Beis HaMikdash think about what Yecheskel had been saying here? I think that's an interesting one. Maybe he thought particularly about the second Beis HaMikdash. Maybe he didn't know that it was going to be a third Beis HaMikdash. Maybe we only know that in hindsight. Do we know that there's only going to be three Bate Mikdash? I don't know. I think it's throwing up one of the interesting points of Jewish prophecy. In any event, as we've said in these kind of circumstances a number of times, that our prophets are not prophets who say what is going to happen necessarily. They are prophesying in a particular context, and they are speaking to society. And they are saying, this is what may happen. This is what may happen if things don't go well and you don't do well. Think this is what may happen if things do go well. So I assume that there was a good chance that the second Beis HaMikdash may have been ultimately the last Beis HaMikdash had we been able to make it as such. We weren't. And so therefore we hope and pray for the third Beis HaMikdash. But I think that that's an interesting one to think about when we read this, the assumption that this is going to refer to the third Beis HaMikdash. I think Yecheskel is also very interesting because this is one of the books that almost didn't make it into the Tanakh, that almost wasn't put into wasn't canonized. In fact, there's some people who say that the book of Yecheskel only should really be learnt by learned people by, I don't know if they actually say over 40 in a Kabbalah type of sense. But it's a particularly difficult book because there seem to be, or maybe there are, contradictions with the Torah and contradictions with what we understand halacha to be. And just as a side note, therefore, I say these things because in my ignorance over the past few years, I've become aware of these types of questions. But in fact, they were staring me in my face the whole time, in that some of these, like this week, is the actual Haftarah that Chazal has chosen. Some of the contradictions which we talk about, which Chazal and Gemara pick out between the Torah and between Yecheskel, are in this week's Haftarah. So maybe it is contentious, maybe it is radical, maybe it is different, and indeed a lot of what the Nevi'im say are, but that nonetheless is what Chazal put in front of us week after week, if not day after day. And I think it's important that we engage with that because that is a part of our Masorah, that as much as anything else. So to go into one of those potential contradictions, there's a question at the end of this Haftarah where Yecheskel talks about how the Kohen will not be able to eat nevela or trefa, various different types of non-kosher meats. And the question which is raised is, why does Yecheskel pick out the Kohen there? Surely none of us can eat that. And there is an answer given, but it's interesting that the Gemara and Menachos actually presents an opinion with a number of these, a number of contradictions. Obviously, I'm not going to go into them now with Yechezkel, this being one of them, where one answer is, it's too difficult to answer, we're going to need to wait for Eliyahu to come. Generally, in terms of the Rishonim, Rashi and Radak deal with these contradictions differently. Rashi tries to apply them in the context of the halacha as we understand it. Radak sees it as a development of halacha, something which is potentially radical in and of itself. But at least in the Gemara, the question is put out there, and the answer is we don't know how to explain these contradictions until Eliyahu HaNavi comes. So just talking briefly about Eliyahu, and that's given me a nice segue into Eliyahu HaNavi, into Santa Claus, and into Pesach. Pesach is, I think, an important one to talk about, as it ever it is, an important one to talk about when we think of that. A month ago, more or less, we were sitting Seder night, and we were opening the door, Shvocha Masor, and the kids were waiting for Father Christmas to come in and to drink from the cup of wine. And also, it's Pesach Sheni today. So I say that about Eliyahu because it's an interesting one. I think Eliyahu obviously is a fascinating Novi and character from Nach, and he's one that I think has been the Eliyahu Novi that we read about in Malachim is very different in a way to the Eliyahu Novi who we refer to in our legends, in our Hasidic tales about Eliyahu coming and saving the day. And in our Nach tales, or in our other tales, maybe, and we'll get into this in a minute about how we deal with or how we see Eliyahu HaNavi separately. Certainly, from the view of Tanakh, from Malachim, he was a very he was an austere character. He was a zealot. We know that he has a connection which the Midrashim give him to Pinchas. He didn't see, or he saw things rather in black and white. When it didn't go his way, ultimately in terms of the conversion or the convincing Am Yisrael of the sole existence of Hashem as God, he asked to die. He wasn't somebody who was prepared to deal with nuances, and similar in that way to Yonah, who one could say, or Chazal say, was either his student, the boy that he brought back to life in one of his miracles, and possibly even a Gilgal of Eliyahu. And one of the elements which we see again with Eliyahu, and the distinction is drawn with Elisha, who is his student, was Eliyahu was all about fire. Fire was brought down from heaven a lot, and water was taken away. He brought on a 3-year drought in the northern kingdom, and brought down fire on various different occasions to do various different, mainly destructive things. So we know, for example, the very famous scene of Eliyahu challenging the prophets of Baal and Asherah, or certainly the prophets of Baal who turned up, to a competition as whose God was better. And it was the prophets of Baal who couldn't bring down fire from heaven, but it was the prophets of Eliyahu who could bring down the fire from heaven, which consumed everything. Interestingly enough, after that, Eliyahu needs to run away from Izebel, ends up in Chorev, and Hashem appears to him, and there's the very famous scene where he's in a cave, he's woken up, and that there's a great earthquake. Hashem isn't in the earthquake. There's a great noise. Hashem isn't in that. And there's a great fire, and Hashem isn't in that. But he's in the kolba mamataka. He's in the thin, still voice. But he is dafka, not in the fire. One of the elements which Hashem brings to show Eliyahu that is not in there is the fire. But nonetheless, Eliyahu remains a man of fire. And after that experience, brings down fire to kill a bunch of other people afterwards. Fire possibly because when in a society which includes people like Ahab and Izebel, you need to fight that with fire. But ultimately, after that instance, Eliyahu was told that he needed to pass his mantle on to Elisha, who was going to be a man more of water than fire, and a man who was possibly more in contact with nuances of day-to-day normal people. But still, we bring Eliyahu, right? We bring him in times of distress. We refer to Eliyahu, and we refer to him also in times of great cycles. So, you know, an obvious example is at the Bris. We bring Eliyahu, and we have Eliyahu's chair. Chazal tell us it's because of that time at Chorev where Eliyahu had complained to Hashem that Am Yisrael had broken the covenant, that Eliyahu, who went up to heaven in fire and never actually died but remains alive, is able to come back alive, so to speak, or at least he never died, and to visit at every bris milah to show that the covenant which we can, that Am Yisrael continue to have, is there. So he needs to witness the bris, the circumcision. Likewise, we talk about Eliyahu Novi, Eliyahu Tishbi on Motzei Shabbos. What's the connection? So there is a Zohar which says that on Motzei Shabbos, Eliyahu is sitting and is praising the, not giving a list of the people who didn't keep Shabbos, but giving a list of all the praises, including those keeping Shabbos, that Am Yisrael did. So Eliyahu turns around from being an attacking personality to a defending personality. Somebody who's defending Am Yisrael and Motzei Shabbos is giving the list of the virtues of Am Yisrael to Hashem. So we bring him on Motzei Shabbos. So the zealousy of his life is translated into something softer after his life, so to speak. And we know also very famously that in structuring the book of Nevi'im, that the very last book of Nevi'im, which is Malachi, and from the Haftarah, which we read on Shabbos HaGadol, we have the famous pasuk, Hinei Anochi Shaleach Lachem Es Eliyahu. It's actually not Eliyahu, it's Eliyahu Novi. I'm going to send you Eliyahu Novi, Lifnei Bo Bayom, Hashem HaGadol Bonoro, for Hashem brings a great day. Veshiv Leiv Ovos El Bonim Veleiv Bonim El Abisom, and he will return the hearts of the fathers to the children and the hearts of the children to the fathers. And actually finishes off there, the pasuk, Ben Ovah Vehi Kesis Es Cherem, in case I come and basically smite the land. So Eliyahu is going to come and he's going to save the day at the great times, presumably of Moshiach. And again, he's going to save us from any anger that Hashem would have. So Eliyahu is able to transition post-death or post-going up to heaven in fire to more of a defensive attorney. So fire is an important one. Fire coming down from heaven comes up only a few times in stories of Tanakh. And one of the obvious examples, or the famous examples, is the story which permutates much of Sefer Vayikra and more, which is the story of Nadav and Avihu, which Dan Altman talked about a couple of weeks ago on Parsha Shmini, where the main story is found. And this is, as we know, is the sons of Aharon come into the Mishkan with a strange fire, Esorah, and are destroyed with fire. So I just want to kind of plant that there for a second and pick up on the language which is used around that, which Moshe, when he talks to Aaron, there's a very enigmatic posuk over that, which I thought I had noted. Here we go. Vayomer Moshe el Aaron, this is back in Shmini, Hu Asher Dibar Hashem Lemor, this is what Hashem said, saying, Bekovai Ekodesh, with those who are close to me, I will be sanctified. Well, Paneha Omech Obey, then I'll be odd in front of the people. So there's some kind of reference here, possibly, that the death of Nadav and Avihu were part of the sanctification of Hashem, part of the sanctification of the Mishkan. Let me park that out there for a minute and go back to our week's Sedra, or go forward to our week's Sedra, which is Emma. And I wanted to share with you an idea that I heard Rav Brovender talk about in the name of the pre-tzaddik. And he asks a question which comes from this week's Sedra, which talks about the Tumah and Tahara of the Kohanim. And he said, why is it that a Kohen needs to be so careful that they are not, that they don't come anywhere near a dead body, so that they shouldn't become Tomei Mace? Why is that necessary? We know in the times of the Beis Hamikdash that there weren't Kohanim other than the Kohen Gadol who were serving every day within the Beis Hamikdash. There was a rota. Maybe they'd be on the rota once, for 2 weeks every year. So why do they need to be careful about being Tomei Mace when the whole issue, at least how it's presented here, of being ritually impure and pure, It's not a bad thing in the person themselves, but it's just something which prevents them coming into serving Hashem, bringing karbonos in the Mishkan, in the Beis HaMikdash. And even more than that, now that we don't have a Mishkan, or maybe we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, why does a Kohen need to be so careful about not being Tomei Mace? He's not going to come and be given bringing sacrifices in any event. What's the point? The Pritzadik explains that the it is something which is inherently kept in the Kohen, in the personality of the Kohen, because of the way that the Mishkan was ultimately created. All the Kohanim are related to Nodav and Avihu. Nodav and Avihu, if we, you know, obviously there are lots of different explanations as to whether they did something right or whether they did something wrong. But if we take the line, which I think, you know, many of Chazal take, that they were, or which is clear, that they were trying to come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whether they did that in a right way, in a wrong way, in a good way, in a bad way, whatever it is, that's what they were. They were trying to come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they were then zapped. And that zapping, particularly if we understand the pasuk that I read out beforehand, was almost a precursor to the installation of the Mishkan. And therefore, in any service in the Mishkan or in the Beis HaMikdash, and in any service or the very being of a Kohen, there are elements of Nodav and Avihu, and there are elements of this striving to come close to Hashem, this establishment of the Mishkan and then of the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, even though a Kohen may not be physically serving at any one time in a in the Beis HaMikdash, he still has in him these elements of extra holiness. Then he needs to be particularly careful about not being Tomei Mace, because he needs to be careful that he needs to be ready at any minute to actually be serving in the Beis HaMikdash and to be offering up the Korbanos, if you want to take it literally. So taking a step back, I think what that means is saying is that even if we are not currently in a particular position that we would need to be in order to do X, we can have elements of the Kedusha and of the intent in us, which we can capitalize on, leverage off, and use, just like a Kohen could always be ready if he wasn't Tomei Mace to go into the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash we don't have because it was destroyed. We don't have shuls now because, we don't want to call them destroyed, but they're as good as destroyed, aren't they? We can't use them, we can't go into them, we can't do anything with them. So a negative way of looking at them is, I guess, being destroyed. But just because the shul is destroyed, just because the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, doesn't mean that we don't bring with us, just like the Kohen does, or just like Nodav and Avihu inspired in the Kohen, that each one of us doesn't bring with us elements of the Beis HaMikdash, and elements of our shul, and elements of karbonos, and elements of tefillah is brought with us, regardless of whether we have the Beis HaMikdash or whether we have the shul in front of us or not, because we are able to bring with us within our souls, if you want, parts of that, and we're able to bring parts of the of the community with us as well, notwithstanding the fact that we're not physically in shul or in the Beis HaMikdash. Those elements remain with us, just like we need to be, or Kohen needs to be careful about not being Tomei Mace, as we learn in MR. Wow, I've seen the time. I'm sorry. So I'll very quickly finish. The other part of MR is talking about the Yom Tovim, and Yom Tovim obviously very relevant. To when we think about shul, we went in shul for Pesach, where we're going to be for the next Yontov. Yom Tovim Shabbos is the kind of the standard layout is brought at the end of Emorah as well. And so very briefly on that, I can't, this is now in me, this is part of my agenda, I can't think too much about the Yom Tovim without thinking, without hearing the words of the Haftorahs of Yirmiyahu and of Yishayahu, Haftorahs which we read on Yom Kippur, telling us that, you know, why are we fasting if there isn't social justice? The words that's Yishayahu. The words of Yirmiyahu on Erev Tisha B'Av telling us, you know, don't think, well, in Chazal putting there and saying, why worry about the sacrifices coming back to the Beis HaMikdash when Hashem doesn't actually want the sacrifices, for long as you don't know how to treat other people. And finishing off with that, therefore, I just wanted to very quickly talk about the Omer. Obviously, the Omer, we're in the Omer, But the omen is a very interesting word. I've completely mistimed this. I apologize. But I think it's such a beautiful idea that I just wanted to still bring it over. This is an idea from Rav Nachum Liebtech. The word omer only appears in three places in the Torah. The first place is in Beshalach, in the portion of the mon, where we're told that the Hashem, we didn't have anything to eat. Hashem brings the mon for us to eat. And the portions of the mon are referred to as being omer. The second one is in our week's sedra, where we talk about the omer hatanufa, the omer which we remember now as we count the omer, which is taken at this time, and it's part of ultimately a bikurim ceremony that we bring our produce to Hashem in the Beis Hamikdash, and we thank Hashem. So it's for the produce that we have. So almost saying that just as by in the midbar when you fed us by miraculous foods, also the food which we have here is miraculous, even though it's from nature. Nature is just the miracle which happens on a day-to-day basis. Just as in the Medrash says that in the time of the Midbar, that the bracha would be Hamotzi Lechem in Hashemayim, we say Hamotzi Lechem in Ha'aretz. This is nonetheless still as miraculous, and it all comes from Hashem. The third place that the Omer comes up, and the last place, is in Kiseitse. And there is a halacha that if you have forgotten produce omer in the fields, then you should leave it, and you should leave it for the ger and the stranger, the foreigner, and for the widow, and for the orphan, for the weaker elements of society. Why should you do this? Well, you should do this maybe on a very basic level. If we're worried, if we want to daven, that we're in a time that we don't know what's going on, we're worried at the very basic level. If we want things to go good for ourselves and to be blessed, then we need to be looking after these weaker elements of society. But wouldn't it be even better that here, the third reference to the Omer, which brings us back, which reminds us of the mon, that we are imitating the ways of Hashem. And just as when we didn't have food at that time in the Midbar and Hashem gave us food, so we have the opportunity to provide and to give to others and to share that chesed with others. And that is something which brings on the blessings of Hashem. But even more than bring on the blessings of Hashem, that is imitating what Hashem did for us in the Midbar. And that is bringing the chesed of Hashem and imitating God and being partners with God and providing the chesed within the world. Sorry that I overshot time. Good Shabbos.